another episode of Magic the Pro the Ring.
That's right. We're once again on the fourth episode of Magic the Pro the Ring.
Mm-hmm. Even though we have recorded more than four episodes.
Yes. In fact, I meant to count, but I didn't.
Neither did I. I actually have literally no idea what number episode this is.
Once again, this Magic the Pro the Ring is brought to you by you, the patrons of the podcast. Thank you all so much for your continued Oh, boy.
Go ahead. Start that part
really?
Over.
Yep. All right. This. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Once again, Magic the Pro the Ring is brought to you by you, the patrons. Thank you so much for your continued support of the show. It keeps the lights on, the cameras running, and us sitting in chairs. Because naturally, yes, we lift out of them.
Yeah, I would never be able to sit in a chair without you guys.
Yeah.
Big time. So. And, of course, we have to thank our sponsor, cardkingdom.com/MTAcast. Head over there for all of your singles or any kind of magic paraphernalia you need. You can always ask for them to put a Magic the Amateuring sticker in your order, and they are so good that they will.
Maria, who is on our fourth episode of Magic the Pro the Ring this
week? Well, Megan, this is a guest that we've had a lot of requests for.
That's very true.
Yeah, and it was just about time. You know, we put it off for a while, and finally we decided, no, we're going to give the people what they want.
That's right. Usually we try and adamantly deny people what they want.
Yeah,
they ask for something
true.
And we're like, definitely
no,
not.
No, definitely not.
But here we are.
But here we are. Our guest, I'm going to read his accolades. It's Reed Duke, by the way. It's Reed Duke, everybody. He won the Magic Online Championship in 2011. He's got a 5th place at Pro Tour Journey into next 7th place at Pro Tour Eldritch Moon, runner-up finish in the 2013 World Championship, wins at GP Nashville, Miami, Portland, Oakland, and very recently GP Louisville. He also writes a ton of articles, records gameplay videos for Channel Fireball, is a color commentator for Wizards of the Coast, and a universally acknowledged great guy. Reed Duke, welcome to Magic the Pro the Ring.
Hey, Maria. Hey, Megan. And hey, everybody. Thanks a lot for inviting me on the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on the show.
So we usually...
Yeah, for the special fourth episode, nonetheless.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
A very special fourth episode.
We saved it for you.
Yeah.
We usually start the interviews off just kind of, you know, playing a little game of getting to know you. And I just wanted to know, for you, your Magic career started pretty early. You were really young. Just give us all a little bit of a background and how you started and learned to play Magic.
Well, I've pretty much played Magic my whole life. I started when I was 5 years old. And I've definitely played to varying degrees of seriousness and with varying consistency. But for the most part, I've been, you know, a lifelong Magic player. I've never really quit the game. And I started playing more seriously around the time I got out of college. And I've been a pro player for about 5 or 6 years.
5 years old?
Wow. Maria, are you still doing any hobbies that you had when you were five?
I mean, you know, like eating with my fingers and...
Yes. I was going to go with, like, walking.
Oh, yeah.
I think that
that's a hobby.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've managed to hold on to for that long. That's super impressive. Can you tell us a little bit more about, like, how that transition went from being a casual player to, like, becoming a competitive player and eventually making the Pro Tour?
Well, I always was... had, like, a competitive... eye towards the game, put it that way. Like I always went to play, you know, the local tournament on Sundays at the local shop. So I always, you know, was trying to be competitive with Magic even since I was pretty little. And I had my older brother and a few other friends that were like, you know, they read Magic content, which was at the time was in like InQuest magazine or, you know, very early days of internet Magic on the Dojo. And so they'd have like really like, you know, cutting edge decks and stuff like that. And I would lose to them all the time. And then I'd just have to, you know, like trial by fire, make my deck a little bit better so I could compete. That was sort of like the early days of my career. And I always, you know, liked Magic a lot and wanted to be as good as I could be. Then when I was in college, I started playing Magic Online a lot, which that's a big transition because just like the sheer volume that you can play and the number of different opponents that you can face goes up so quickly. You know, you go from going once a week to play against the 6 or 7 people that show up at the shop to having every single Magic player in the entire universe, you know, on your computer to play against. So that was, I'd say, a big moment. Played a lot of Magic Online, and that's actually the way I qualified for the Pro Tour in the first place, winning the Magic Online Championships. And then, yeah, coinciding pretty closely with graduating school, I got on the Pro Tour and haven't really looked back since then.
I'm curious to know what you studied in school.
Economics.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I've yet to do anything useful with that degree. That's what I studied.
Well, you know, I'm using my theater degree every day. Yes. Let me tell you that.
You know, I've always heard that economics is very impractical. It's not something that you see used every day.
But I bet you know when to sell a card.
Yeah, I guess so.
So what
they don't
do you
teach
think?
You much about magic in econ class.
Oh, they should.
They really should. Mm-hmm. So what's kept you playing the game for so long? What do you love about magic?
Well, that's a pretty good question. I'd say there's multiple parts to that. One is just like as a I'm a pretty competitive person, and I like to have a competitive outlet. And in that sense, magic is perfect for me. Like, you get to have some amount of creativity, a lot of strategy. You get to think about it, you know, and plan for it. Basically, any like spare moment that you feel like thinking about magic, there's something cool that you can brainstorm about. And then, yeah, I like the actual like face-to-face competition of in the same way that, you know, a lot of other games would fit the bill, but just matching your wits against the, you know, guy or girl across the table from you is fun for me. So that's the competitive aspect. But then there's also the social aspect, which, again, I enjoy just like going to a tournament or a convention or a local store, anything like that, and getting to meet a lot of people that have this shared hobby with me. And as I've played a lot more Magic and even traveled to play the game, it's cool to meet people that can be very, very different from me in most ways, but we still have this shared experience, this shared love of Magic. So I feel really thankful for the social aspect too. And then, of course, there's just the fact that I've been playing all my life and I have this nostalgia, and just holding, like, you know, a handful of seven Magic cards in my hand feels really good for me, because it brings back all these memories and good feelings and all the stuff that, you know, has been such a big part of my life.
I'm interested, too, about this competitive nature of the game that you're so drawn to. And you mentioned it, like, pretty early, you felt competitive when you played, like you're trying to beat your brother or his friends or something like that. Does this manifest itself in other areas of your life? Like, were you did you play sports? Were you constantly challenging people to battles of wits? What was it?
Yeah, I'm, like, a pretty natural competitor. It's just sort of like the way my brain is wired and stuff like that. Like, every time I pick up a new video game, it's like not just supposed to be fun, but it's like, how can I be the best? Like, how can I come up with the best strategy as quickly as possible? So yeah, like, you know, my core group of friends that I've had, like, ever since I was little, we're all big gamers. And a lot of these guys, even though, you know, some of them are big into Magic, some of them are not, but they're all like really like fiercely competitive, and they all, you know, give me a run for my money and usually beat me when we play these other different games. I did some amount of sports, and I would just say, like, competition's sort of in the blood for me.
Megan knows a little bit about that.
Yeah. I used to try and compete at everything until I found Magic. It was a really nice outlet. You know, it's not great when you're trying to compete with people at, like, improv. Not a competition. Not a competition.
Yeah, I've had difficulty with, like, you know, various, like, hobbies and endeavors like that, where I try to treat it as a competition, but it just doesn't.
Oh, yeah, you bake those cookies?
Exactly.
Well, watch this, buddy.
Exactly. When we're, like, knitting, it's like, oh, yeah. How fast are you going to finish that pattern?
Speaking of, we do have some fresh cookies.
I'm tracking my results to make sure I'm improving with, you know, each day that I'm knitting, I can get more done in 1 hour, stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes it's like, really, you got to relax, take a step back, and just enjoy yourself.
Absolutely.
But that's something that you do. I mean, that I believe you do. You track your results, and I heard stories about you making pretty extensive notes at tournaments that you would play at and stuff to kind of be be like, I made this mistake and I don't want to make it again or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to try to be as organized as possible in that way. One of my philosophies for magic is sort of like quality over quantity when you're practicing. And a lot of people, I think, sometimes get frustrated because they just like play, put in all these hours. And then at the end, they're like, okay, now what? You know, like, what did I learn? Or like, what was this process leading up to? That kind of thing. And I really try to be more like process oriented and try to make efforts to like understand what's going on in the games, what's causing me to win and lose. And I think that can be like a way to, you know, accelerate how fast you're learning the game.
So you mentioned like quality over quantity. So I know that like some pro magic players spend, you know, like upwards of like 8 to 10 hours a day practicing. But what does like a typical day in the life look like for you? And a week, like maybe you've got like a GP on the weekend that you're going to.
Well, I lead a very unusual lifestyle, and in some sense, there's almost no like typical days. But yeah, you mentioned traveling to Grand Prix. So I travel most weekends of the year, maybe like, you know, 35 to 40 weekends out of the year. So a typical week is like, you know, I'm leaving Friday morning or afternoon. I'm getting home Monday afternoon or Monday night. And then I have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to, you know, plan my next trip, practice for the tournament, write my articles, and of course do all my normal human being activities, like do my laundry and, you know, like see my friends and family and everything like that. Pay my bills, whatever it might be. So yeah, it's just like, I try to have as much of a schedule as possible, but a lot of it is just fitting in what I need to fit in wherever it fits, I guess, you know, just spending the hours on whatever the most pressing task is and trying to be as organized as possible and look ahead to the future events and stuff like that, because sometimes you have to anticipate like, okay, I'm going to be so busy the week before this tournament that I need to, you know, prepare and figure out what I'm going to play further in advance. So yeah, it's all just basically a mess and I got to figure it out as I go along.
That's life. Yeah.
I have one small recommendation. When you're so busy and you have a list of things to do, instead of doing laundry, you can just not do laundry.
Wow, that is great. That is a great point.
Yeah, it's a great option. You know, it's just like, yeah. Oh.
Along those lines, a typical day for me usually starts with writing a to-do list of like 12 or 15 things and then getting like 3 of them done, you know?
Yep.
These other 9 have to get pushed to tomorrow and then add the 15 things I have to do tomorrow. And
that is scarily familiar.
Yeah. Do you like the life that being a professional magic player has afforded you? I mean, a lot of people, I think, looking in from the outside, really don't know too much what it's like to have to, you know, make sure that you're playing tournaments every single weekend, you're writing articles, you're creating content, but then at the same time, you get to do something you really love. So, yeah, I just want to know how you feel about this as kind of a career choice for yourself.
On the whole, I love it. I love magic and I feel really thankful that I get to, you know, play this game for a living, and I definitely would not trade it for anything. There are some pros and cons, just like with any job, and part of the, you know, like the hectic travel schedule is definitely one of the cons, one of the stresses. So there are things that are not perfect about it, but all things considered, you know, being a pro magic player is great and it's the job for me.
Awesome. So you have 2 PT top 8s. You've been a couple of times behind the coverage desk. Your brother's in R&D. Like, what do you see as your long-term magic goals? Because it really could go, it seems like you have kind of all of these directions that you could potentially
go. Yeah, and I guess this year is sort of like where I have to try to answer a lot of those questions for myself, you know, to decide where I'm going to put my focus coming up. I would say the main thing that I'm trying to emphasize, you know, not just to my coworkers and teammates and fans, but also to myself, is that I still want to be a player first. So I still want to make sure that I'm competing in all the pro tours and a good number of Grand Prix and giving myself, you know, the best possible chance to qualify for the world championships, because that is one of my goals that is still really important to me to accomplish, would be winning the world championships and a pro tour possibly. So I'm not ready to, you know, hang up my hat just yet. Maybe there will be a day somewhere down the road where, you know, I step away from playing and more like other aspects, more get into other aspects of the game. But for now, I would say I'm really still trying to be as good as I can be as a player, and winning a pro tour is like a lifelong goal of mine. I still want to work towards that. And then I'm just dipping my toe in the water when it comes to coverage and some of these other things. And those are really fun and rewarding too, but I have to, you know, keep the right balance.
Megan mentioned your brother, Ian, who works in R&D. I want to know, like, how hard is it for you not to, when you see him at family events, be like, hey, so can you tell me what's really cool in Omniket? Can you just, like, you know, just whisper it softly into my ear?
It's hard. as I mentioned, you know, earlier, I grew up playing with Magic with my brother for nearly, you know, over 15 years before he got his job at Wizards of the Coast. So we developed these, like, these habits, these ways of talking to each other. I remember with my brother, before every set came out, it was like we would sit down at the computer and look at the spoiler, and we would, like, talk about what cards we loved and didn't like, and, you know, oh, like, I bet people are going to try to play with this card, but it's going to be really bad. And we'd have all these, like, really specific predictions and stuff like that. And that was really fun. But now, like, I can't do that because we have very different perspectives on the cards, and he knows them ahead of time, and it would be, you know, not appropriate for him to, like, give me any advanced information, stuff like that. So a lot of the temptations and the habits that I developed talking to my brother, like, have gone out the window. So that's a little bit of a shame. But, we still talk a lot about Magic, and now he comes home and I get to yell at him about all the things that I don't like. Oh, you know, you gotta unban this card in Modern, blah, 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 blah. And share all my opinions really forcefully, and he just sort of nods and goes like, okay, I'll pass that opinion along.
It's a whole new perspective on, like, family, like, holiday dinners where everybody's just like, oh gosh, man, I really hope that Reed's not gonna yell at Ian again.
That's so cute though. I mean, to be able to share something that you're both so passionate about with your brother, I think is a really neat connection that a lot of people don't get to have.
Yeah, I mean, who would have guessed when we were little kids that we would not only both still be interested in Magic as adults, but also have, like, two very different, you know, career paths within the game. It's pretty cool.
All right, so what is your favorite format and why?
I get this question a lot, and the real answer is, for somebody that plays as much Magic as me, I just feel really thankful that there are as many different formats as possible, like, you know, variety is the spice of life type of thing. And if I had to play the same format week in and week out, I'm sure I would get sick of the game a lot faster. So I really like the mix of limited and constructed. I really like being able to play Standard and Modern and Legacy. I really appreciate the fact that there are a lot of different formats to play within Magic. If I had to choose one as my favorite, I like Sealed Deck. That's a bit of an unusual choice, but I just really like, I feel like Sealed Deck is, like, in a way the purest form of playing Magic, where, you know, it's a little slower. The cards are not as powerful. You don't have quite as many resources to work with, and you just have to, like, you have to use the really basic skills of Magic instead of leaning behind, like, a really powerful deck or something like that. And,
what do you say to people matters a lot, which is fun, who think that Sealed is just really luck based?
Well, I would say give it a little more of a chance. They're not exactly wrong. There is a lot of luck in Sealed Deck, and for example, it can be hard to get a bigger edge in Sealed Deck. So for example, if, you know, you're, like, a really, really, really strong player and you can win 70% of your draft matches, you might not expect to also win 70% of your Sealed Deck matches, but you can definitely win a lot more than 50% if you are good at the format and work hard at it. But so that, yeah, that's a little bit of a weird segue about exactly what the meaning of luck within Magic. But anyway, there is luck in sealed deck, but it's also really important to have these basic skills and to be as disciplined as possible and not just give up if you don't like the cards that you've opened or anything like that. So yeah, I really like, you know, practicing sealed deck and going to a Grand Prix where sealed deck is the format on day one.
Awesome. I think
that's my favorite format.
In Constructed, do you have a favorite deck of all time?
Yes, my favorite deck of all time was the old standard Jund deck from, let's see, original Innistrad that had Huntmaster of the Fells and Thragtusk and Bonfire of the Damned. That was just the most fun for me. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. That was a deck like right when we started playing.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I didn't really know much about Standard for quite a while after I started learning. You followed Standard before I did. I remember yeah. that.
It was like, it was just a little bit because it was like, it was the original Innistrad and then we started playing during RTR,
mm-hmm.
which it transitioned like into RTR a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a question I love to ask everybody who comes on the show, and it sounds a little weird, but I want to know why you're good at Magic. Some people, I mean, we've had wildly different answers mm-hmm. of, like, what makes you able to win a ridiculous number of GPs? What do you think your special skills that you bring to the table? Literally. Sorry.
Well,
I would like to think
that it goes a little bit back to what I mentioned earlier with the quality over quantity in terms of practice. I think my advantage over, you know, some of my colleagues or up and coming players is that I am pretty organized and I think I have a good process for learning and preparing for tournaments. But basically, the answer is just like many years of hard work. I don't think I have any particular like ingrained talent for the game. I just sort of am a competitive guy who tries really hard. And after a lot of years of trying really hard, this is where I've landed.
What do you think makes for good quality practice? I've been for sure known to just fire off a bunch of drafts and like not really think about them, just play. And I guess that's probably what you mean, is that you're focusing on every decision you make, or?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like there's still it's still fine to just play Magic and have fun and not really take it too seriously. And there's also like a time and a place for that, even within my own process. Like sometimes my goal is just let me get in as many games in the shortest amount of time as possible. And that's a useful tool too. But you should mix that in if your goal is to improve with like some amount of playing where you're just really focused and not distracted by outside things. And you're actually trying to, give the game a level of attention where you're processing like what's happening and what are the causes for what's happening. And, you know, the game ends and it's easy to just go like, okay, like I won or I lost, let's go to the next game. But if you take just a brief moment to be like, well, what was the key to that game? Why did one player lose and why did one player win? Then you can quickly get like a deeper understanding of what's going on in the games of Magic and actually, you know, lead to, you know, major breakthroughs either in the decks that you're building or the way you're playing the games, stuff like that.
Yeah. So you've mentioned like putting in a lot of practice over time, but do you feel like there was any particular, like a lesson, a match, an event where you had kind of a turning point in terms of like going from
leveling up?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, a big part of leveling up in Magic is going to be learning from talented players. The turning point in my career was joining the Pantheon, my current Pro Tour testing team. And for my first 2 years on the Pro Tour, I didn't have that much success. And I didn't have an extensive network of people to practice with. I had, you know, my brother Ian and my cousin Logan Nettles, who's a really good Pro Tour player as well. And we would practice together and discuss the game and everything. But that's not the same as that. That's not the same like type of resources that long run pro players have access to, where they have giant teams and like networks and they can share all these ideas and have other people build decks for them and stuff like that. I didn't have that for my first couple of years on the pro tour. So when I joined the team that we now call the Pantheon, I had the pleasure of just getting beaten mercilessly by like all the best players in the history of Magic. And that's a way that, you know, just like when I was five and my older brother was beating up on me on the kitchen table, it was like that's the fastest way you're going to improve. Cause it's like, I don't want to play a draft and just go 0-3 every time. Like, what am I going to do to be able to like compete against these guys? So that, along with just the individual conversations and lessons I learned from all of those different really talented players, was, as you say, like a way to level up, I think.
I personally want to know what you can tell us. We're not going to tell anybody else, but how can we level up our Aether Revolt draft? Because,
oh my God,
let me tell you, we're not doing well right now.
Yeah, it's tough out there. It's no joke. If I had one like specific tip for Aether Revolt draft, that's different from a lot of other draft formats, is just pay really close attention to how many lands you're putting in your deck. I think it's easy to just be like, oh, you play 17 lands in booster draft, like period, that's it, and not think too much about it. But Aether Revolt's very unique in the sense that, well, it's pretty fast format, so you're probably not going to have too many expensive cards in your deck. B, there are a lot of cards that cantrip, like the implements or the name's escaping me, this Unbridled Growth type card, the enchant land. Sacrifice to draw card. And then there's also stuff like Renegade Map, where you just directly, like, this card, Renegade Map attuned with Aether, these cards sort of are mana sources. So weighing all these things, like, makes for a much different picture than when you just have a really like vanilla basic deck like you might have in, you know, M15 or something like that. And sometimes you have to be willing to play 16 lands or even 15 or 14, you know, depending on the exact configuration of these cards that you have
14
in your deck. So yeah, not saying that that's like a try at your own risk type of advice, but the point is just to, you know, to pay close attention to it and not take it for granted that you should always play 17.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. In fact, Maria was the first person who was like, I've been putting six, or like to me was like, I've been putting 16. And I was like, wait a second.
Because it's so funny, because the normal thing you think is I'm focusing on the creatures and the quality of the spells and whatever in my deck and how it works together and the synergy that lands is sometimes, you know, not even a it's fifth like an thought.
Yeah.
Afterthought. It's an after dinner.
Yeah, piece. It's definitely like an underappreciated aspect of limited Magic, I think, because if you have played a lot of limited, you know that one of the easiest ways to lose is just like you trade resources with your opponent, and then by the end of the game, oh shoot, I've drawn like three or four more lands than my opponent. I lose, you know? So if Mana Flood is one of the most common ways that a game of limited is going to be decided, then it stands to reason that you should like really care about the number of lands that you're putting in your deck. One of my, you know, Magic mentors is Gerard Fabiano, who's known as being like a little bit of like off the beaten path type of player. And he developed a strategy a few years ago where he would just play like 12 lands in his limited deck and all his cards would cost 1 and 2 mana and stuff. And nobody would like, you know, people don't even take that seriously. They just go like, oh, that's Gerard being Gerard. But there's definitely things to learn from players like Gerard, and I think that was something where he was on to a really cool concept that not a lot of people think about.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Let's ask our other famous Prothering question,
yes.
Megan. If you could change one thing about Magic, what would it be and why?
Well, I would say I would try to, you know, in a perfect world, I would like the game to be a little bit slower than it is in modern day. Like, just to take current standard for an example, like you have the two best decks of Mardu Vehicles and Black Green. these decks are just way too fast and powerful. Like, they have 10 power and toughness in play on the third turn of the game, which means that if you have a bad draw, or you know, one of your lands comes into play tapped on the wrong turn, like, you're just dead. There's not a lot of flexibility and a lot of room to, you know, to leverage your your creativity or your play skill. And it also, from a broader perspective, like, I've felt like I've been teased a bit with Kaladesh and Aether Revolt as a deck builder, because there's so many like awesome things that you should be able to do by like combining these cards in cool ways. But if you actually want to be like 100% competitive, just none of these cool things are going to compete with getting attacked by, you know, by a 5/5 Heart of Kieran on the third turn of the
game. I don't know what's so wrong with that.
Everything's wrong with it.
I mean, then as the aggro player, I feel like I have to defend myself, but I absolutely see what you're saying.
I mean, do you don't. That's the point.
Yeah,
that
you're don't only get me attacking. Wrong. I like beatdown decks. I like to attack too. It's just the fact that things are like so punishing. I wish, you know, it could just be like one notch slower, where you don't feel like,
yeah,
you know, you're dead if you have a bad opening hand or anything like that.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
I only, in Dublin, I only wrote a handful of like written feature matches, but every single one that I did, no game went past turn 6.
Really?
Which was just
wow,
completely crazy. That like is. I've never had that happen, you know, sitting and watching finals of GPs or anything like that. It was just, and we're talking about like 3 or 4 matches that I saw, and you know, however many games, it was. Really?
I believe Magic is the best and the most fun when games can be either fast or slow. Like, you have to prepare yourself to face like the fast aggro rushes, but also have a plan for the longer game. And when it gets to be too extreme in one direction or the other, I think it gets kind of lame.
Yeah.
Talk about the
harsh words.
Drafts. Like, I'm sure you've had the feeling of your opponent plays Renegade Freighter on turn 3. And
oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
You just have a bunch of like 1/1s and 2/2s, and you're like, yep, like,
I'm to this train.
Game. I don't know why those trains, I mean, I God. Love those trains, but I also hate those trains.
Yeah.
Because those trains are the real deal.
Yeah, they're brutal.
Brutal.
Oh, Untethered Definitely. Express, because we needed
like,
a
how
better
is that real?
Renegade Freighter.
Did you look at your brother in the eye and say, Untethered Express, explain yourself?
I should have next time I see him.
Okay,
like,
thank
who
you.
Looked at Renegade Freighter and was like,
eh, this
card is good, but could be better.
Yeah, true.
Since we're on, you know, talking about limited sets right now, if you could design or if you could like theme any set, like Maria, notoriously, her theme set would be.
Yeah, it's Huey Lewis in the News 80s hair metal band's theme set.
Oh, yes. Wow. I would play that.
Yes. mine is a waffle and generally breakfast themed set. So if you could theme a set, what would you theme it after?
All right, well, I haven't had as much time to prepare my answers.
That's fair.
Yeah, no, we
fair.
Sprung this one
I know,
on
we
you.
We really did.
Within the things that are, like,
real?
In the realm of, like, what Magic might cover, you know, like...
Are you telling me
saying
that Waffles or Huey Lewis in the News is not...
No, those are both...
Okay, good.
But I don't know. I'm a big fan of, like, ever since I was a kid, just, like, the King Arthur legends and stuff like that, just sort of like the, I mean, it's sort of like the classic Magic, right? Like knights and dragons and stuff like that. But I would like to see, you know, a new set that's like a throwback to that stuff, you know, alpha and beta and stuff like that. And, in particular, I love Arthurian legend, and anything that's like a reference to that would really strike a chord with me.
That would be pretty
amazing.
That is
a really good. You know, I can't believe. So we're going to have
maybe,
an offline chat about author and legend stuff because I'm huge on it. But like I hadn't ever thought of it. And so this is like getting me really excited because I'm like, that's a great idea. Because then you could have like the wizard set and, you know, Merlin is kind of like the king of the blue cards, essentially. And there's fairies. Oh, it all works.
That's actually Merlin's full card name is Merlin, comma, king of the blue cards.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
That would be amazing.
Oh,
and maybe
help?
I will admit that it is slightly more within the realm of possibility than 80s hair metal.
I will stretch
but
that.
But only a little bit. Only a little.
We could have the two dragons fighting underground, then so the castle can't stand. That's a cool card.
Yep.
Oh, okay, anyway.
Okay.
Great idea. And finally, like, what are some interesting hobbies or other things that you do in your life that people might not know about you? Like, what's your hair care regimen? Just kidding.
That's that. All that stuff's just pretty normal. A hobby. Well, I guess one of my hobbies, I enjoy trivia. And if being a career Magic player isn't nerdy enough, I'm practicing to go play Jeopardy night at the local library next week. So
that's amazing.
That's so cool.
That's my fun fact, I guess.
What's your number one category that you're like, oh, yeah, I hope they ask like something this in this category?
Magic flavor text.
Wait, okay, so
hold on, I got
can you give us quiz. Give it exactly like give us an idea of exactly how good you feel you are at magic flavor text, like on a scale of 1 to 10? What
I'm pretty good. Like if you were to ask me
be prepared because Maria is googling a card right now
from one of the recent sets. I think I would have a pretty good shot at getting the card.
Okay, all so right. This one's pretty famous. But so it was the first one that popped into my mind.
Okay,
Malphist Doorbuster, which was one of my favorite flavor texts.
Oh, so you give me the card?
You have to
and
go the other way around.
Text. Oh, yeah, I have to do the flavor text.
That's a much harder way to do it.
Oh, okay. Well, I went to hard mode immediately.
Yeah, sometimes I can get it like that, but I don't know if I know the Malphist Doorbuster. I'm sure it's just
it's ridiculous. Do you remember
which
Megan?
One was it? No, I just remembered all of the alternative names for him.
Oh yeah, it's knock knock. Too late.
That's really
okay. I think let me think of another one here. Here's the one that's just coming into my brain. Oh, I typed it wrong.
We used to sometimes play the game on like long car rides where Gatherer has just like a random card generator and
okay, here's one.
People will just give me the like a random flavor text off of a random card from any set.
No way. Okay. All right, here you go. This is from the current set. Conflict breeds opportunity. That's kind of like really vague, but
conflict breeds opportunity.
I mean, I would never know.
I would never.
Never.
It rings a bell. Let me think about that for one moment.
This is going to be a weekly feature, I imagine, in the amateur. Stump
Yeah, it sounds like a, I don't know, it sounds like a Tezzeret type of line, but I don't know if I'm...
So the card is blue, I'll give you that.
It is blue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Conflict breeds opportunity.
Oh, I've got a good.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get this one. Right. I'm shamed here, publicly shamed.
This one, I mean, I picked something really random. It's yes. Shielded Aether Thief. Shielded Aether Thief.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, Megan.
Okay, here we go. Subtlety is not a necessary part of sabotage.
Whoa.
Is that incendiary sabotage?
No, it is not. It is a rare from Aether Revolt.
Jeez.
Right?
That's so weird.
Never have read that piece of text.
Neither have I.
Me neither.
I would guess Release the Gremlins, although I think that has a different flavor text.
Ooh, now I want to know.
Text on
that.
Release the Gremlins. That one is Greenbelt Rampager.
Greenbelt Rampager, okay, which is interesting because this was initially not a creature.
It wasn't?
No.
What was it?
It was supposed to be a spell, but they changed it into an elephant because of the art. They needed a creature or something.
What did it do as a spell?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, let's see if we can get like one that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh, that one.
Okay. All right. Aether. Oh, wait. Which one do I read the flavor text?
Yeah, you read it.
Aether is the soul of Kaladesh, and all souls should be free.
If you.
We had just stumped him.
Yeah. I feel like...
Is that Rogue Refiner?
Oh, no.
No.
Rishkar, Pima Renegade.
Okay. Well, the point's taken. I got to stop studying for Jeopardy.
Okay, how about this one? Get out of my way. I would never think
that one is very strange.
Get out of my way. I mean, it actually is what the card does.
Yeah.
But it's not a very... It's not really a thing I would associate with this color.
No. I see what you're doing, dropping subtle clues here.
I'm trying to throw a bone. That's Baral's expertise, believe it or not.
I feel like if you ask any more, it's being mean.
Okay, we're done.
Yeah, I guess I definitely have to work on the Aether Revolt cards in particular. But.
Okay, we won't show up to your library trivia night exactly. And screw you over.
Like, right in, excuse me, I have a Jeopardy category that I need you to put in.
Just an anonymous note with, like, $5 bill slipped into it.
And I'll know who's behind it. If
okay, you're
right. The library's going to be like, what is this?
We never get donations like this.
Okay, outside the world of magic, what would you say, like, your number one Jeopardy category is?
There's certain things that I used to be really, really strong on that I've sort of gotten a bit rusty, but, like, most history, I'm pretty good with European history or, like, Chinese history. Spanish history I'm really good with, and I'm okay with classical music.
Okay, but we're now going to Google some classical songs.
Yeah, and make you identify within the first 5 seconds. We really turned this interview
around.
So before we go, I just wanted to also ask you one final question, which was just to talk a little bit about what you think magic has taught or given you as a person in your life.
Yeah, that's just such a tough question because magic has been such a big part of my life for such a long time that picking any particular like tidbit almost feels like it's not doing it justice. But let me see if I can come up with any specifics. How has magic?
Like what is it?
Yeah, like anything that it's like taught you or given you.
I mean, we did have somebody say everything, you know. Yeah. So it really doesn't have to be specific. Because for you,
yeah, I mean,
you know, it's just been there for such a long time.
It has been there for such a long time. I mean, I like I said, to name specific things all feels like it's underselling. But I do remember, you know, when I was in grade school, for example, like magic just helped me a lot in school. Like it taught me a lot of vocabulary words. I basically, most of my reading was done like on magic related stuff. And makes you more interested, gives you better application for like certain aspects of math and probability and everything like that. So yeah, I mean, just like cultivating the basic skills that you need to play the game, I think makes you generally a smarter person. And if you're a student, that can help you. Yeah, I mean, I could probably go on for hours with this question, but the basic thing is like I would be a completely different person if not for magic. And yeah, there's a lot of like specific things that we could go into, but I am who I am because of magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, it's been an absolute delight talking to you, Reed. Thank you so much for coming on, having a chat with us.
Yeah, I had a great time. It was, more challenging interview than I'm used to with all the trivia questions, but I did have a great time, and I really appreciate you both inviting me onto the show.
If people want to see your stuff or read your words, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, channelfireball.com. I produce weekly content there. You can reach me on Twitter. I'm at Reed Duke. And then a newer project that we're working on is our team website and streaming channel. That's Pantheon Magic. I've been streaming. I'm new to streaming a little bit, but you can check me out there. Pantheon Twitch.tv/PantheonMagic.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Yay! Sweet. Okay, I'm gonna stop my recording.